Well, here we are. We have
Tony Nixon, who played Ron Elf.
And we're both here sitting at a cafe, catching up, having a brief chat about your role as Ron Elf.
Yep.
The new movie coming out
December 10th.
So I've had some questions come through. A lot of them have come through from 90 Web fans because they're the ones that got back to me in time.
Sure.
We'll start off and we'll see where we get to, and we'll see what we can find out. So can you give us a quick rundown of how you'd explain your character to someone unfamiliar with the movie and the role, and exactly what you do in the movie?
Okay, wow, that's a big question. Ryan Elf is a member of the crew of the Dawn Treader. It's no secret that in this film he is a first mate. And I know that in the book, Rince is a first mate, and there's been some conjecture about blah, 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 you know, Ryan Elf's a first mate and Rince's role has changed and so on and so forth. I can't go into that too much for obvious reasons. But actually on the Dawn Treader there are a number of people who wear first mate uniforms, and it's certainly not unusual on a ship to have ranking officers. So my role on the ship is as first mate, so therefore I'm answerable to Drinian directly, played by Gary Sweet, and then I pass those orders on to the crew. So that's basically my role as an officer on the Dawn Treader, the Narnian Navy's finest ship.
Ooh, lovely. So how much screen time or dialogue would you have in the actual movie?
That'll be very interesting to see how that comes up in the cut. Dialogue-wise, I do not have a huge amount of dialogue. I've gone to great pains to let people know that I don't have a huge amount of dialogue. But because this film is mostly set on a ship, all of us have a lot of screen time. As you can imagine, with a crew of about, well, I'm talking crew here, not film crew, I'm talking about ship's crew, of about 30 or so sailors. Yeah, we're all in a lot of shots, pulling on ropes and crossing through frames, and a lot of the reaction shots to the stuff that the leads are saying.
Excellent. And we'll get to some reaction shots in a question a little bit later. So, how did you get the role?
Oh, that's interesting, because everyone knows that actors have agents.
Yep.
And agents are wonderful people, if he's listening. If he's not, agents are about as much use as a chocolate teapot. I was very fortunate. The way things work in the film industry, particularly in Australia, is through the grapevine. Now, I had been touring overseas for 2 years on and off with a live show and was really out of touch, which was happening in film and television. For various reasons, I decided I wanted to move on from that show. And a very good friend of mine, Neil Fanning, who incidentally plays the voice of Scooby-Doo in both the Scooby-Doo movies, said to me, "Are you doing anything in Narnia?" And I said, "In what?" He said, "In Narnia." I said, "I didn't even know the film was being made here." And so I got onto a casting site called AT2, which is an internet casting site, and looked at the roles and saw the role of Ryan Elf, which particularly interested me. But actually, to be honest with you, I'd have been happy to get an extra gig as just one of the crew, because it's such a huge film to be made here. I then contacted my agent. My agent contacted the casting company, sent photos, and like everybody else, I auditioned. The different thing is with this audition, normally when you audition for a major feature film, what happens is you have your first audition, and then you have what they call callbacks. So you have a second audition, you go back, they pick out maybe half a dozen people who they think might be close for that role. Well, my agent phoned me and he said, "Congratulations, your director's choice." Michael Apted said, "Your director's choice." And I said, "Great, when's the callback?" He said, no, you don't understand. Your director's choice. So Michael Apted actually personally chose me for the role.
Fantastic. That's a pretty significant sort of a thing to happen, especially in a movie of this scale.
Yeah, it is. And when I met Michael, because it was done on tape, when I met Michael, anyone who's met Michael will know he's very dry.
Mm.
Very English, and he just said, lovely to meet you. You look very good on tape." and that's about all you get out of Michael. So.
Well, I don't know if that's a compliment or not. So was it what you thought it would be?
No, it wasn't what I thought it would be. Because we were working on a gimbal, on a ship, that rolls and pitches and moves with 30 actors at least playing the crew of the Dawn Treader, plus most of the time 30 crew members who are like the film crew, very cramped conditions. Although the script didn't change and although the action didn't change, the process of getting it done was quite arduous and a lot different to what I was expecting, yeah.
So as part of that process, obviously there's the costuming and the makeup and all that sort of preparation that you needed to put into it. Yeah. Was there any sort of physical preparation for the role, going and working out in the gym for a while, or getting any battle scars, or making yourself look really sunburned all the time?
I tend to keep myself pretty fit anyway. I do like to work out. So they had said from the word go that we'd need to look fit. And so I did actually put in a lot of extra work in the gym. I did bulk up. There was rumour that there'd be a scene on the oars deck where we'd be sweaty with our shirts off, which is terrifying because I also had to consider the possibility of wax. But ultimately, it didn't come to that. The bizarre thing is, when you look at the Narnian costumes, we are wearing great big shirts with huge puffy sleeves, so my perfectly formed pecs were nowhere to be seen. I'd already done a fight training course, because I knew there'd be some sword fighting in it, so I bought a practice sword and basically just brushed up on some of those skills so that I didn't take somebody's eye out, you know, during a sequence.
Probably pretty important.
Yeah.
Makeup-wise, was there much to do to make yourself look beautiful for every shot, or...?
Absolutely not.
Was the reverse? they had to deteriorate your face to make you look, you know, weather-beaten and...
No. Fortunately for me, it only involved growing a beard and growing my hair longer. And the makeup girl every morning filling in a few bald patches, so that, you know, that was about all it amounted to. I didn't have any prosthetics or anything like that. The poor guys who had to go in every day for 2 hours... pre-shoot,
yeah,
because we shoot for 10 to 12 hours a day, and you know, an extra 2 hours in prosthetics is no fun. Even though Howard and Tammy are beautiful people, they realized too that for those actors, so I was very fortunate. Half an hour in makeup every day.
Great. So what about the props? Did you have any interesting props that you got to handle or that you got given and you went, wow, this is pretty...
Well, I got a sword.
Well, that's all right. Did you get to keep the sword?
No.
Right.
No. In actual fact, we used the same swords that we used in Prince Caspian.
Okay.
So it was kind of nice because there's actually a shot of Edmund, one of the publicity shots where he's got two swords in a battle sequence, and one of those swords is mine. Now, Edmund, if you're listening, Scander, it's now mine. So I remember coming home to my son and saying, oh, I've got this role in Narnia. And he'd read the books and thought, that's fantastic. But when I he's 11. When I told him I got a sword, it was like all the trumpets in heaven had gone off. Wow, you got a sword. Other props, there is another prop, but I can't tell you.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So what about, we talked about the gimbal before. How was it working on the gimbal? Like, what was the probably most interesting part of it for you? For those that don't know what a gimbal is as well.
Yeah, okay. A gimbal is a hydraulic platform that the ship sits on. And if you're familiar with the movie Master and Commander, that's how that was shot. It's a lot easier to shoot a film on dry land, obviously, than it is out on the ocean. That way you can get camera cranes and equipment on the outside of the boat shooting in. So basically it's like being on a big fairground ride. It rolls the boat around and it pitches. It was fascinating to know how it worked, because for each sequence, they would program the gimbal to go through a various set of movements so that when you reshot that sequence from a different angle or from a pickup or from, you know, 2 weeks later, you might pick up some more lines in the same sequence, it was already pre-programmed to pitch and roll and do what it was supposed to do. From an actor's point of view, it's certainly another thing that affects your focus.
Mm.
Because, you know, you're delivering lines on a stage that is moving. So yeah, it was interesting. Once we got into studio and we shot some big action sequences again that I'm not allowed to say too much about, but of course anybody who knows the book knows there's a serpent involved. Big action sequences with water cannons and tons of water being dumped onto the deck, and then that thing really rocked. It is capable of moving in ways that you would not believe. It can pitch almost onto its side.
Did they have to, like, harness you in for that sort of stuff, or...?
Well, important people got harnessed in.
The ones that were meant to fall off fell off?
No. Yeah. There's a lot of stuntmen falling around. I never got harnessed in.
Does that say something about your role?
Well, I don't know. There was a sequence where one of the sailors gets attacked in the crow's nest and nearly falls out, and I desperately begged Michael Apted for me to do that role. And once again, in his very dry way, he said to me, "Oh no, you're far too important. We'll get a stuntman." I don't know what that says about stuntmen. But no, I was never harnessed in, but obviously camera guys, especially with handhelds and shoulder-mounted cameras, were harnessed in. Often the makeup ladies and the auxiliary crew were harnessed in. We were on the deck in shot, so we were either harnessed or stunt doubles were used for the particularly dangerous moments. I had a stunt double, and he was never used.
Interesting.
Well, he was on deck a few times in scenes, and a lovely guy, but never had to replace me, so...
Cool. Okay, so with the books, have you... You said we were talking sort of pre-interview, and you mentioned that you read the books as a child and, you know, growing up. So, did you read them again in preparation for the role?
I read The Dawn Treader again in preparation for the role. I wasn't good enough to go back and read Lion, Witch and the Wardrobe, but two things about that is, firstly, it's a family favourite in our house, Lion, Witch and the Wardrobe. My kids have read it. My wife works in a bookshop and specialises in children's books. We know that book very, very well, and we have worn our, I was going to say DVD, but it's actually a video cassette, worn that to oblivion, and seen the stage show in London as a child.
Fantastic.
So very familiar with Lion, Witch and the Wardrobe. But yeah, absolutely, I did read Dawn Treader again, yeah.
So did you notice differences from the book into the movie, and how your character evolved or changed or, you know, was introduced?
Yes, I've got to be very careful here. Of course, as you'll all understand, any book that's adapted to film is going to have changes. And I don't think I'm saying anything there that people don't already know. I obviously can't comment on what those changes are. In my heart, I seriously and honestly feel that the film is true to the truths of the book, if you like. The spiritual truths are all there. I don't think anyone's going to be disappointed with that. And I think the themes of the book are all clearly there.
Great. So, off that, I guess, I mean, if you want to, if we'll ask one question. This actually came from one of the guys in Narnia fans. He asked more directly towards you and your faith. Do you have a strong faith in your life?
I'm always very careful how I answer this, mm-hmm. because a lot of people identify as a Christian, mm-hmm. and that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And I'm finding myself in the public eye. I certainly wouldn't put myself up as a poster boy for Christianity. But yes, I do have a faith, and I do have a belief system. But I'm nervous of putting myself out there because of other people's expectations of what that might mean, and I'm going to disappoint someone.
We're all human.
Yeah, very human, very fallible, but yes, I have a faith. Yeah.
And so, in Voyage of the Dawn, you mentioned there is still that the spiritual side of it that does come through, that from the original C.S. Lewis, I guess the people can read into a lot of spiritual messages. You believe that a lot of those have still remained intact without being altered in the movie?
I do. I guess it depends what you read in the book, of course, because everyone reads something different. For me, there's a lot in the book about tackling fear. In the book, where they go into the mist or into the darkness or whatever it is, and fear comes upon them, there's a lot about the need for an external, stronger force to help us overcome our fear. I believe that's very strong in the film. The whole Eustace, falling and being redeemed by the power of Aslan, mm-hmm. is very strong in the film. I don't think any of that is lost. In fact, I'd go as far as to say that if you made a direct page-by-page copy of the book, my personal feeling is the people that watch that would be the people who've read the book, the people who probably are Christians already. To some extent, I think this will reach a far, far greater audience with the same message than just a page-by-page lift of the book. But that's just my personal opinion.
Oh, look, that's what we value. Okay, so back onto the movies. The costumes. We talked about the props a little bit. The costumes. Now, one of the most famous things about 90 in clothing is that it's so amazingly comfortable. Is that fair to say about the costumes you were wearing?
No. I have to say that wardrobe are fantastic, and wardrobe do their utmost to make you comfortable. I have two costumes, three if you count the hat. Now, I'm a short man, and I had a real problem with the hat because I felt it made me look like a smurf. But everyone else said the hat was great, and I wear it in one sequence, and it makes sense to wear it because the weather conditions in that sequence make it sense that I'm wearing a hat. The sailors' uniforms, and they are uniforms, we're a navy, are comfortable. There's no problem with that. Although working in Australia, even in September, outdoors, pretty warm, a very heavy velvet waistcoat.
Well, it's September now, and it's very warm. Everyone's walking around in T-shirts at the moment.
Yeah, we had some 30-degree days on set that were pretty uncomfortable. So that costume wasn't too bad, and I must say the detailing was beautiful. Every single button on my waistcoat had a little Narnia Navy emblem, and the belts were all leather-tooled. Nobody in the world could put these costumes on their own. So you have a vision of all these sailors getting up in the morning helping each other dress, because obviously we had costumers to help us into that.
Doing each other's hair and makeup.
Yeah, exactly, Let's leave it there. But we had to wear armour.
Yep.
Armour is incredibly uncomfortable. Armour is... The first thing that happens when you put on armour is you get an itch you cannot reach. It's rather like anything you put over your face, or if you put on makeup on your face, anything, I say you don't touch your face, you'll immediately get an itchy nose. But the armour was uncomfortable, and in fact, the first day I wore the armour, it cut my back open.
Ooh.
On my shoulder blades. Broke the skin. The costume department were fantastic. Within 20 minutes, they had repadded that, but of course, the damage was done. So the armour is not comfortable. Well, we spent 2 weeks on a soundstage where we were soaked to the skin all day, every day. And so it doesn't matter what you're wearing, that's not comfortable. And the colour on in my pants. My trousers are purple. And I remember after doing one particularly wet scene, I had purple legs for about 3 days. Because
so the costume department hadn't checked them that thoroughly.
They hadn't fixed the dye, that's for sure.
Okay, so back onto the characters. Yep. Now, you've said that there's only so much you can say about the characters.
Mm.
What changes can you talk about that you saw between Ryan Elf and Rince's dynamic?
Oh, wow. Okay. I actually don't know what I can say about
it. It's a tough question because it is a bit grey.
It is a tough question, and I know that there's so much speculation out there. And of course, I have signed various papers that say, you can't say this and you can't say that. What I will say is that in this film, Arthur Angel, who plays Rince, and myself decided that Ryan Elf and Rince would be buddies. And so there is some bonding and some camaraderie between the two of us. That's probably as much as I can say. There's no issue with the ranks, shall we say.
Cool. Accent.
Yep.
I know there's been some talk about the scene. There was the that's no volcano comment.
Yep.
They're asking what accent, obviously Drinian's using in the clip, what accent you'd be using. And does it change, or are you all going with the same accent, or is there a bit of a mishmash on the...
There is a bit of a mishmash. Somebody very high up in Fox, I believe, made the decision that they would go with UK accents. I don't have a huge problem with that. To my mind, when C.S. Lewis wrote this, being English, I think he would have envisaged English accents. And I know Doug Gresham had no problem with it at all. There were some issues about the Telmarine accent, because in Prince Caspian, it's a very Hispanic accent. It's a very Spanish-sounding accent. That decision was made back then. Fox decided they did not want that. They did not want that Spanish accent. I don't know why. Obviously, that decision was made well above me.
Mm-hmm.
And so UK accents are basically what was we went for. There's a certain amount of uniformity. The Pevenses are upper middle class English anyway, so they have that fairly set in stone. Probably the most controversial fact is that Ben is now talking with an English accent. We all decided on set to say, well, you're the king, you've had elocution lessons. I think if you watch the two films back to back, that might be an issue. I would hope that anybody watching the film standing alone, that won't be an issue.
Well, if you think about it, he's not the same person.
Well, he's not, and absolutely right. What we went with for the sailors was, what I went with and what most people went with was West Country English. But I softened it because I was aware that particularly with American audiences and overseas audiences, they may not understand it, and I did not want to sound like a pirate. Having said that, there's a huge tradition in the UK of sailors coming from the West Country. And so that rural English, that rural West Country accent, similar accent you might hear the hobbits using in the Shire, is kind of where I went with it.
So how hard was it for you to fake that sort of accent living in Australia?
Well, born and raised in England, and having lived in the West Country, I've always been very fortunate with English accents. I can do about 28.
Wow.
And most of those will pass even to the locals, so very, very fortunate. I need to work on my American accent. Anybody who's seen Mermaids, I apologise. That's one of the films I did in the past where I used an American accent. And so if I'm going to make it in Hollywood, I'm going to have to work on that a bit.
Okay, dealing with the CGI elements in Narnia.
Yep.
What was the challenges that you faced and the most exciting parts of it?
Again, for me, not a huge challenge. My background prior to acting was in physical theatre and mime. So I'm very used to working with things that aren't there. As a mime artist, that is one of my skills. And so that wasn't a huge problem. We always were given an eye line, a point, somewhere to look at. That obviously to act to, as an actor, the challenge is you're getting nothing back. Someone is reading the lines and they're very often standing in a completely different part of the ship, so from a listening point of view you're getting your lines from a completely different area, which is awkward, but you do get used to it. It was a challenge for all of us in scenes where the whole crew had to sight line, for instance, Eustace when he was a dragon, or the whole crew had to sightline the sea serpent, something that's moving at speed and over the top of the boat. Getting everybody to hit the same spot and look at the same spot was difficult. Reap's very easy because Reap has a little stand-in mouse that they use, and there he sits and you have your eye line.
So what sort of things do they do? They have like a giant tennis ball they throw across the sky, or
In the studio it's fine because you just use a laser light.
Yeah.
And you shine up onto the green screen. Out on the boat, not so easy, because basically we were assigned points that were numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And there's actually a YouTube clip where you can hear that the second AD, the first AD actually, Jeff saying, "The dragon's at 1. Now he's flying round to 2. He's at 3. He's on the crow's nest." And then so you kind of had, everybody had to know exactly what those points were. That became more complicated because as the day went on and the sun moved, they would then shift the boat on the gimbal so the shadows were the same and all those numbers would change. So I know that in Prince Caspian with the water god, they used a remote control helicopter. And in hindsight, I think that would have been terrific to have done that for us on this. But we didn't have that luxury for some reason. $150 million, obviously they cut on the remote control helicopter.
Next time. Okay, this is probably a bit too much of a spoiler, but I'll ask it anyway.
Yep.
Does your character make it to the end of the movie?
I don't think that's a spoiler. He makes it to the end of the book.
Okay.
And therefore, he makes it to the end of the movie, yes.
Okay, great. That's good to know.
Well, it's always good for an actor, too, because when you read through a script and go, "Oh my gosh, I die on page 12,
yeah.
That's never good.
So I guess then, it points to reason then that the great sea battle at the end, you're going to be in it. We sure.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, I am. Yes. How much I'm going to be in it, I don't know, because action sequences are shot in such a way that everything's 1 and 2 seconds long.
Mm-hmm.
So there'll be flashes of me.
Pain looks, expressions of shock.
Yes, yes. Great. If he fires that water cannon one more time, I'm going to hit him.
I guess the only other question was the one that we mentioned previous to the interview, which was about certain characters not making it in. And you mentioned that you couldn't say.
I cannot say, no.
You don't know, can you even say the character that we're asking, whether or not they made it into the movie or not?
What I would say is if you go into IMDb at this point in time, if they're not on the cast list, they're probably not in it. Either that or they've got a very bad agent. That's as much as I'm prepared to say on that.
I think that's a very, very non-committal answer.
I should be a politician.
Look, exactly. The only other thing, I guess, is the opportunity for you to tell us anything that you'd love to. Is there anything that you think that the fans would love to know about that you've got a special insight into?
We were shooting this digitally, as you now all know, because it's been made into 3D as well as 2D. So we were able to watch everything on the split screens. We were able to go down into the director's tent, into the DOP's tent, and look at the stuff on screen. I think visually, it's going to be amazing. The stuff we saw had not been color corrected. The stuff we saw still had green screens in place and blue screens in place, and you know, various orange marks and points, and that they're all, of course, taken out by the time the film's produced. I think visually it's going to be a stunning film. I think it is going to differ from the book. I think if you are wholly and solely locked into a page-by-page lift, let go of that idea and accept the fact that it is true to the themes that Lewis put in there. Trust Doug. Doug was on set every single day, and Doug makes sure that that happens. And I don't think you'll be disappointed with the end. The end varies from the book only slightly in that who is there, but the message that I know, particularly you people of faith, want to be put across at the end of that film is crystal clear, doesn't change, and if you can walk away from the end of this film without shedding a tear, then you've got a rock in your chest.
Fantastic. It sounds like it's going to be amazing. It sounds like it's going to be...
I'm excited.
Yeah, well, I can tell you're excited. I'm excited. I mean, it's something that we're going to have to wait until the 10th of December to see.
Yes, and hopefully I'm still in it. Yeah, because what ends up on the cutting room floor, what ends up on the screen, I've got all these wonderful people there, and thank you all for joining my fan site. I hope you're not disappointed.
So have you got any plans yet for the premiere? Have they booked you in to...
No. Now, funny enough, we're actually finding out, the Australian cast are finding out about the premiere the same as everybody else, via websites. And we have one or two people that are in contact with producers. It's now a royal premiere, as everyone knows, which is very exciting. I don't know which royals are going to be there. There are at least 4 support cast members, I think I can tell you. Myself, Stephen Rook, Mirko Galini, and Arthur Angel, who do want to attend and have made it clear we're willing to pay our airfares and go and attend it in London, and now we're waiting to hear back.
Great. That's should be really, really exciting.
Mm.
Look, I don't think there's much else to quiz you with at this stage. I'm sure as the movie gets closer to coming out, and this is where there's a few more facts and tidbits out there that we can start quizzing you about, there may be some more questions that come up.
Let's see what other trailers come out.
Exactly.
Let's see what's in those. And I'd be very happy also to talk to you after the film's come out.
Yeah, well, look,
because I think there's going to be discussion. And
that's when you can tell us all those secrets you couldn't tell us before.
Yeah, and also, maybe talk about my feelings about what was changed and what wasn't changed.
Yeah, look, I'm really excited for it. Thank you so much for making yourself available.
My pleasure.
And look, from Narnia Web and Narnia fans and everyone else who's going to be listening to this, thank you so much for your time, and we look forward to seeing you on the big screen very shortly.
Thank you very much, and can I just put a plug in for my Facebook site? guys, I do have a fan site. It's run by admin. It's not run by me because I'm very, very busy, but I do get on there most days and answer people's questions personally. So just go on to Tony Nixon Official on Facebook, and we'd love to see you there. And there's lots of news on there about the next film I'm doing too.
Yeah, that one sounds really exciting, so please do go check it out.
Right.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.